All right, welcome to Talk Mental Health with Logan Noon, Mom.
Hi, Logan.
Yeah, you know, you're going to be the 70-something episode.
Awesome.
This is actually the first podcast I've done, at least where I've been filming it and recording. So a little strange. That's why I had to awkwardly clap at the beginning. I don't know what I'm doing with this whole film thing. But yeah, today's episode, we're going to talk about the children's book we made.
Awesome.
Which is one of the things I've been most proud of. It was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, quite frankly. And I'm excited to get into like why I found it so hard. And I bet you had your own challenges, but in different ways kind of thing. But yeah, Mom, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Logan, and to talk about our book.
So I guess before we talk about the book, why don't you just tell the listeners like kind of your career background in 30 seconds?
Okay. So I grew up in the Midwest in Minnesota. I'm very proud of that. On a farm. The town was 600 people. I never had any art. None. Zero. In high school or elementary. Went to college. Wanted to take art, but was very scared to take any art because I didn't have anything in high school. And then my sister Meredith cocked me into taking a design class. I got an A. I took another class. I got an A in art. So that kind of gave me a little confidence that I could do some of that. But I was really good with textiles, so went to become a buyer. Went to college, became a buyer, and traveled all around the world. And I love color. And then I had children because I traveled so much. We didn't want to have children with me traveling. So I had children and was doing a lot of volunteer work and kid work and artwork. And somebody said, you should be an art teacher. And I'm like, I should be an art teacher. And it came from friends that know me very well, Sherry, Heidi, and Claudia, who know me very well. So I've been an art teacher for 22 years. I was your art teacher for a couple of years. Yeah. Never had Liza, but... and so that's kind of my history. I've been teaching art for 22 years and loving every day the kids, and I've just recently retired. So it's another new venture, and this time it's going to be my art, pottery, which is what I really like to do.
Yeah, well, now all the listeners know where I get my verbose nature, because you were a little bit off the 30-second mark there, but I love it, because I'm long-winded as well. And so, yeah, definitely get it from, well, probably both sides of the family.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess let's just kind of talk about why we even did this in the first place. So, you know, years ago, well, first off, actually, while you were saying kind of your career story, you know, I just so the listeners kind of always understand, like, I took a big career change, too, where I was working in insurance and finance and went into medical school. And if, quite frankly, you hadn't done the same thing and I saw that it was possible, I don't think I would have ever done it. Or maybe I would have done it differently, shorter, you know, maybe gone into nursing or something. But you just made a kind of radical change, and I saw you go to school and work and all these things simultaneously, and it was nuts and inspired me to do my change. So thank
good.
You
good. I was older than you were, though. I was in my 40s when I was doing
rub
that.
It in. Yeah, but make sure the listeners know. Yeah, no, I was even, it was harder for me. Yeah, and you had kids, so true that. I didn't, all I had was cats
and masters, but
life.
You're going to school. No, it was a great, life's a great adventure, you know. That's why I look at it, and all of it, you learn something along the way, and this is a new adventure that you and I did together. We've never done anything like this.
So why, in your words, did we decide to make a children's book?
Well, I think it's a couple things. You know, you have been very open about being bipolar, mm-hmm. and you had this poor podcast going, and I was on the school end, the very young end, and seeing kids that also were living under a lot of stress. It's not called mental illness at that age or anything like that, but a lot of stress, a lot of anxiousness. And in school, we were doing something, and I was showing the movie and working with the school counselor about Inside Out had just come out. Mm-hmm. And maybe could get the video, because we were showing it in school, and
yeah,
I was
Pixar
using...
Pixar film, for any of the listeners who don't know, like a kid's Pixar film about emotions.
Yeah, about emotions. So I was having kids doing a lot with emotions, with color and lines and putting their different face emotions and stuff like that. So I think you and I just started talking that, you know, Logan, you're doing a lot for adults and maybe anybody 15 and above, I don't know. Mm-hmm. We really should do something about kids. For kids. And I think that's just how it came. And I said, you know, I love color and I am not a great artist. I just wanted the world to know. Mm. I am no illustrator for this book. I had to find a medium that I felt comfortable with, and I love collage and mixing things. It's my textile major kind of thing. And so that's how kind of we came up with, you wrote the story, Ben, and you should talk about where you got the story. It's your friends, kind of a collaboration.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've always talked about why I did well with my bipolar disorder is because we caught it somewhat early-ish. You know, I still think it would have been better if I almost caught it earlier. But it motivated me to, you know, go to medical school to try to help others
right.
like this. But, so I guess, you know, where the story came from and why I think I've been able to be successful in accepting my mental illness is I have three close friends of mine who all live with various health conditions. You know,
right.
Two of my friends who I've known since, God, age 7, 6, something like that. One has a heart condition and one lived through cancer. And then later in life, I met a friend in college who I lived with for a few years, a great friend of mine who he had type 1 diabetes. So he lived with that since age, I don't even know, 11 or 12, something like that. But the common theme amongst all those three dudes in my life was I never heard them take a victim mentality or
You're
complain
right.
about it. They just dealt with it. It's just part of what they, whatever. Like, I have to take meds. I have to go see a doctor. I have to go have surgeries. You know, each one of them have to do different elements of that.
But it never stopped them living.
Yeah. And two of them actually were collegiate athletes. One was on the track team. One was on a men's soccer team. You know, it was, and I just never heard them complain. So when I was diagnosed with my health condition, I really just tried to emulate how they treated their chronic health condition. And think about it, you know, why is a brain condition, that organ, different than their organs, the pancreas, the heart, and really the blood, the bone marrow? Why is it any different? It's just a various, you know, the brain is just composed of chemicals that are more or less kind of the same. You know, they're very, very similar at the end of the day. In certain ways. And that's kind of, I think, why I was able to be so successful with my condition. And, you know, that's where I guess, got the story from, at least the idea.
Well, and your openness, Logan. I think when you first were diagnosed with bipolar, it was be quiet, don't tell, be nothing. And then when you made that move to California, that as a mother, I was very nervous about, you were open about it, and you found such a difference in your life about being mm-hmm. open about it and how people accepted you and whatever. And that's what this book is. This boy, Logan, at first didn't want to tell, but friends told him, and what they used, whether it was meditation or exercise or any of those things. Mm-hmm. But the openness was so helpful to you and all the other people that you've helped. By being open about whatever it might be. Like, your friends didn't hide that they had this. Mm-hmm. They just told everybody. You decided, most people hide this, Logan. Mental illness is still hidden a lot. Don't tell, don't whatever. And by opening up, it helped you, but you helped so many other people. And that's what this book we're trying to do with children. Just give them some ideas about how they can deal with their stress or their anxiousness, or there's so many things out there these days that can help children. And I know the illustrators that I like, I really like the color. So this book is full of a lot of helpful hints, but it's also full of a lot of color because I love color.
Yeah, no, the illustrations are absolutely beautiful. And I'm super stoked we got it into hard copy and Kindle. For the listeners, logannoon.com, easy to find this, logannoon.com, get access to the children's book. But so what I found very challenging that I didn't anticipate, because the general gist of the story was actually super easy in my head, because I was like, oh, these are three of my best friends, this is super easy, like,
right.
I can make this a story. And then I remember the first draft I sent over to you, you shot right back, and you were like, look, I think I was maybe 28 years old at that point. You're like, Logan, you wrote a great book for maybe someone who's 15 years old. You know, you used words like anxious, depressed. I don't even know. I probably used other kind of complex.
You had too many words, Logan. It runs in the family. We talk too much. Yeah. It was too lengthy for kids. So we just tweaked it.
But it wasn't even length. It was also the words.
Yeah, the words. But it was a lot of words. And kids, we were talking about how fast things move today. It's got to be cut so it's not short and dry, but gets the message down with the least amount of words, and they still understand it.
Well, and you've had an extensive career. I don't even know how many years of teaching.
22.
22, yeah, you just retired. Cheers, congrats.
Thank you.
And you liked working with the smaller kids, the little kids, you know, kindergarten through what, third grade?
I had third grade. That was my, yeah, three-year-olds to third grade. So you have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8.
And, you know, based off your expertise and the idea for the book, we wanted to try to target that exact kind of age. You know, Litchfield Center School, where I went, where you taught for those 22 years, for the most part. And so you really taught me, like, how do you use, or how do we explain the concept of depression and anxiety to those six-year-olds? So I guess, let's talk depression. How would you describe depression to the six-year-old? Like, how did you walk me through this?
Well, I think what we just really talked about is more about feelings, Logan, going back to that inside out. Like, if you feel sad, and you feel sad a lot, you know, you don't really say depression to a kid, but you say, how are you feeling? Mm-hmm. And if you have a lot of days of sadness, then here's some things that can maybe help, or talk to it, or see someone, or medication, or something like that. But it's not, kids don't understand the word depression. They know how they feel. If they're happy, they're sad, they're, but we were just trying to give kids, if they get really anxious or angry really fast and stuff like that, we were trying to give them some things in this book that really have helped you. Yoga, meditation, exercise as an adult.
Yeah.
And so by putting it, giving these kids the idea, it gives them the control. They can, it gives them some tools. Then mom and dad always fixing it, or, you know, this is wrong. Or it helps the child if you're starting to feel anxious. Well, maybe you could take some deep breaths. And that's being done in the schools. I'm not saying it's just in our book, but this is what we wanted to try to do in the book, to give the kids the tools.
Yeah.
To help them feel. So and, it's more and feelings.
And it's so much more complicated than just a pill.
Yes.
You know, it's that's an aspect of mental health care. But, you know, and what I learned even from the friends in real life, and then, of course, we turn into a story, it's like, yes, the meditation, the exercise, and
simply sleep,
and simply connecting with others. You know, trying to deal with a mental health alone at any age is the worst way to do it.
Yeah, any disease, Logan, alone.
Yeah.
But, you know, we went to a thing, NAMI, and they really said, when somebody has cancer or something like that, bring over casseroles, and they all do it. When somebody's mentally ill, they stay away. They don't, you know, like, and so we need to open that up. That is a disease of the brain. And we need to educate people that that's what it is. It's a disease of the brain. And we shouldn't be afraid of it. We should be open. We should be helping that same person, just like we would help a person that has cancer and is going through chemo, or has, you know, broken their leg and they can't move around. You know, like, it's the same thing. And we have to change as a society to understand that.
Yeah. Well, in the previous episode, I had on this great one, J.P. Scott, for the listeners. Check out that episode. It was awesome. But we were talking about, he's a medical student like me, how to be a good doctor, to be really effective with your communication skills, you have to be able to explain complicated concepts in extremely simple terms. And quite frankly, I thought I was pretty good at that until this book. And then I was like, whoa, like, this is a whole nother level of trying to break this down. And so it was really interesting, and it has kind of really inspired me to consider child and adolescent psychiatry. Definitely, you know, it's just because if you can intervene at this age, the outcomes, I think, could be
tremendous.
Much better.
Tremendous, Logan. It's, if we can teach these skills young, how to learn to calm your body, how to not get angry so fast, how to, that's lifelong skills. And the early intervention as a teacher, and I have them at 3. So I see the progress of some issues that children have, and by working with a counselor or I'm going to talk about speech. That's not, but the kindergartner teachers don't even know that this child, early intervention is key.
Yeah.
Is so key to helping these children. And at just an early age, just to take a breath. It's as simple as that. Just take a breath. I used to say to the kids, because I had kindergarten come in after recess, so they were wound, you know, they'd just been running around and crazy, and we would smell the flower and blow out the candle and just do that a couple and just calm our bodies so our shoulders would go down and you know, and you could tell some of them had yoga because they were doing this or whatever, but it just, it was great skills to just help the kids kind of calm it down. And and we live in a pretty rushed world with, and we're testing a lot in school, and we're doing a lot of stuff. You know, we're going to soccer practice, and we're going, not during COVID, of course. We've all slowed that down. But, you know, that's kind of a good thing. I mean, it's been hard for people, I'm not saying, but just this, slow it down, calm it down a little bit, and take, what is the saying, you know, take time to smell the roses, you know?
Well, and one of the, before we get into, I want you to really explain, like, the illustrations, how you kind of made this beautiful book. But before we get into that, you know, another reason why I wanted to make this book is before medical school, I was working like a bunch of odd jobs. As a pre-med student, I was studying for the MCAT, so I was a student driving instructor. Worst job I've ever had in my life. I don't know how I didn't even get a car
accident. Taking breaths, being calm,
it was
anxious.
Terrifying. But I did enjoy trying to teach a stressful skill to that age group, you know, like sophomores in high schools. It was fun. I always... I could always...
You're always good with kids, Logan.
And I was a camp counselor, ski instructor. I could see myself being a kid doctor in some form. But I digress. So, you know, I would talk to these sophomores, juniors in high school, sometimes seniors, and the amount of crap that they were doing was insane. Studying for tests, the intensity of sports, you know, morning practice, evening practice, or any other extracurriculars. Getting into college just seemed so much more stressful and intense. And I remember talking to you about this, and you said, Logan, high school's like that? You go, all grades are like that. You know, my second graders are getting tested way more than you ever were. Can you talk about just some of the differences in stress you saw?
Yeah, there's the national testing that every third grader in the country is getting, and there's a lot of stress to that, to the numbers and stuff like that, but... Also, Logan, it's the amount of, like, okay, we're all on this time, and they've got to be here and there, and after school, it's not just going, there's no playing in the neighborhoods. You know, it's soccer practice at this time, then it's piano at this time, and then there might be dance the next day. And then now you got a brother. So now you're going with a brother to this soccer practice, to that, to this, and Boy Scouts could be in there. All good stuff. I'm not saying, but it's... It's a very fast-paced life that we've gone to. And this computer is wonderful, but it's also made everything fast-paced. Like, I've noticed the change in kids that it's got to be up on the screen and they've got to watch it that way and they like that movie. Or if I put on a video, they really like it rather than listening to Mrs. Clemenson sometimes. Mm-hmm. But what is, and this is why we did book, the one time I can slow them all down, they will all listen to a book. It's very interesting. It's a very common thing. So parents, keep reading because, no, they really do listen to a book. You can slow the whole thing down and just listen to a book. And so that's kind of one of these mediums that we used here is the book. And I know kids love color.
Yeah.
And I know that too many words were too much. So we were doing that. But we... And I'm not an illustrator, so we collaged the book, and we'll talk more about that later. But
yeah, and it, you know, it's a what, 32 pages? It's a quick read, and we think ages like 5 to 12 is what we hope?
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe a little bit younger. I think a 12-year-old hopefully will have the skills that we're trying to teach in this book or been exposed to by that time, because these are lifelong skills that will really help a child with... Just any child. This is a book for anybody to see that we all have something. That's why we called it that. We all have something. And so for kids to understand that, and it doesn't have to be something that's visible.
Yeah.
All these things you couldn't see that they were just all internal. And Logan discovers throughout the book that, you know, these, he never knew that these kids had this.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so let's kind of talk about now how the book looks. We talked a lot about our story, why we kind of wanted to do it. But, you know, one thing I thought that was really interesting about this book you really wanted to do was the key.
Yes.
And then also you, other elements that you kind of talked about, like having like a hint of what's going to come on the next page.
Right.
All these elements that I never in a million years would have ever thought of. Let's talk about that.
Okay, so I took some illustrators that I really liked, and I'm not going to get into names, but I
not
got...
Not a name drop.
I don't want a name drop, but I liked the color of one. I knew I had to collage
You're
the book.
You're covering your mic here.
Oh,
Rookie.
Sorry.
Come on.
I had to collage, because I am not an illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked to a lot of color. I also wanted to intrigue the kids, like, what's coming next?
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about, like, what's your prediction or whatever. So I have a little key in the beginning of the book that all the children, the four kids in this book, you being one and then the other three, have are affiliated with a color. You're blue, another kid is green, another kid is orange, another kid has variations of pink, okay? I also wanted to tell about, this is a labor of love. This took me 2 summers to put together. Some of the pages have over 50 pieces of cut paper.
Yeah, that's
them.
Wild.
So it was a labor of a mother's love. So I have in the key a heart. So every page, the kids love to look for stuff like that.
Mm.
Like the colors kind of tell them who's coming next. There's a little key from the beginning. And then the heart is hidden throughout every page. There's a heart somewhere. When you open up the face of the book, there's a heart somewhere. So the kids are looking. We had a He's almost two. We had him looking for the shape. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's looking for things. Kids love those I Spy books. You love them. You know,
yeah.
Where's Waldo? All these things. So we have a little mother's love key in there of a little red heart on mm-hmm. every page.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I that's like your... such an interesting perspective and expertise, because I never, you know, when I think of picture books, you first brought that up, I was like, what are you talking about?
And he wanted to leave it out. Let's just
yeah,
play,
yeah.
you know, he wanted to leave
Throw
the key
me
out.
Of the bus here. because, you know, yeah, the generation of this book was, you know, it had interesting challenges because we were doing it all on our own. You know, we contemplated doing it through a publishing company, and that had its own challenges. And then we were like, let's just, you know, you design it. And then we have full control. And so this is... You know, if you choose to support our book, you know that it was me and you doing this. And that's not true, I guess.
We had
a lot of family friends who really did help us
and edit
us.
And stuff like that.
We didn't
like
have some massive publishing company helping us. So
no.
I think it's
and
really cool that we made it
you
like
had
this.
A friend that really helped us present it well, you know.
Yeah, yeah, who quite frankly is one of the characters in the book, oddly enough. But
so
yeah,
thank
he,
you.
He was kind of our electrical... coordinator Rob Harpin, and we can use his name because he's listed as one of the composers of the book or compilers of the book, or forget his exact title.
Okay.
But he was our expert that exactly fitting these beautiful collages that she made onto the page perfectly and helping us with all that because...
And typeset. We had some typeset that was too small. You want it bigger and
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah, and you know,
an
we the book is on Kindle as well as, you know, this really nice big hard book. 8x11, I think it is. It's a big page. The Kindle version is $5. Hard copy is $25. You can get them on Amazon. And yeah, I mean, this was just such a really fun project. And we're going to make kind of a really detailed video on exactly what this whole collage thing means. So if you're only listening to the podcast right now and you're not watching any of this, log on to YouTube and you can find... You know, exactly, my mom's going to show us how she cut out these collages, why she chose certain colors, and how she designed kind of the book, because that was really your arena. I think this was a great episode, Mom. Is there anything else you want to share?
No, just that I love you, Logan.
Yeah, I love you too, yeah. All right.
To show you how easy it is to file a claim with Geico, we hired a nature show host.
In the native habitat of a suburban driveway, the poor victim of a broken windshield is left assessing his vehicle, utterly helpless.
Well, not true. If he's got Geico, he can file a claim online, over the phone, or with his handy mobile app.
But like a lone gazelle, he'll suddenly be left to fend for himself, awaiting his terrible fate.
Nope. Geico will assign him a designated claims team to help him out, too.
So the gazelle gets his car fixed and everything.
Wow. Nature is so cool.
Geico. Great service without all the drama.
What event comes once a year and could change how you see the world around you? The answer? When your vision benefits renew. And now that they have, there's no better time to visit your neighborhood Pearle Vision, where they'll cover your out-of-pocket cost or insurance copay for your eye exam. Schedule your family's eye exams at pearlevision.com. Valid prescription required. Valid at participating locations. Restrictions apply. Taxes extra. See store for details. Ends 4/30/2022. Exams available at the independent doctors of optometry at or next to Pearle Vision. Some doctors employed by Pearle Vision.